Along the railroad tracks leading into Fort Smith, C.B. Harrington and Arch Radnor rode the aged Indian ponies at a slow walk. Harrington had long given up on trying to make any time on these run-down animals. When Harrington and Radnor had found the party of Cherokee camped beside a stream the morning after Sims forced them from the train, luckily he had $600 in his pocket, the exact price the old chief had asked for the animals. Neither Harrington nor Radnor had noticed that the two old ponies were being kept in a meat pen along with a couple of goats and a worn-out sow. At the rail station in Fort Smith, Harrington tucked in the rip on the shoulder of his ragged suit coat and stood at the ticket window until the young man in the green visor cap stepped forward.
May I help you, sir?
Yes. I'm looking for a private Pullman car with the letters CBH Enterprises on the side of it, in bold English Gothic. It was on the train from St. Louis and should have arrived here on the 18th.
The 18th? Yes, sir. It came in on the 18th, was cleaned, safety checked, and resupplied with bourbon and food staples as per forwarded instructions.
Oh, good then. Where is it?
Where? Yes.
The clerk licked his thumb and shuffled through the paperwork again.
Mr. Harrington and his lady companion left here 3 days ago, headed north.
Damn it to hell, no!
In a burst of rage, Harrington swept the clipboard aside.
What is the meaning?
I'm Mr. Harrington, you imbecile!
your brother then, perhaps.
Easy, boss.
Arch Radnor pulled Harrington away from the counter.
You can't start letting Quick Charlie Sims get to you this way. You said yourself he has a way of getting under everybody's skin, making them slip up, doing exactly what he wants them to do.
You're right, Steelhead. Thanks. I'm okay now. Just give me a moment.
Serves you right, you fine-haired son of a bitch.
Harrington and Radnor turned to face Dirk LeMaster and Louisville Ike.
Where's our damned money?
Keep your distance or I'll keep it for you.
Wait, gentlemen. Hold everything. Do you realize what happened out there?
No, and we don't care. You were supposed to have somebody pay us as soon as we left the game. We damn near got ourselves shot by that gypsy swindler Sims. Now pay up. We don't care how many apes you have swinging in your tree.
Radnor seethed, but held himself in check.
All right. Everybody stay calm. I apologize for you not getting paid right away. I'll go to the telegraph office, wire my bank in New York, and have money sent.
Now we're going with you, just to make sure you don't get sidetracked again.
It won't be necessary, I assure you. You may wait here with Mr. Radnor until I return. It could take a day or so before the transaction can be completed.
Yeah? Well, meantime, we're sticking close to you like grass in a pig's droppings, Harrington, so don't get any ideas.
It might interest you to know about the pistol Sims held on you. You remember? The one that almost caused you to soil yourselves? It wasn't even loaded.
Louisville Ike and Dirk LeMaster looked at one another blank-faced.
Yes, it's true. It turns out Sims doesn't like carrying a loaded weapon. He made blithering fools of both of you with an empty gun. So chew on that while I go have some money wired to me.
So? We had no way of knowing the gun wasn't loaded.
Of course not. All of which tells the world he is far better at poker than either of you.
It makes no difference. The game was a setup anyway. As far as Sims goes, we'll get our hands on him someday.
Yeah, well, someday seems a bit vague, don't you think? However, if you'd like to get more specific, Mr. Radnor and I are heading north to go after Sims immediately. If you truly like to get a hold of Quick Charlie and break his knees for him, you'll never get a better opportunity.
What, you're offering us work?
That's right, if you're both able to handle it. Mr. Radnor and I are going after Sims for another reason. He and his woman threw us off the train. I can promise you when we find him, we're going to set things right. Now there's $500 in it for you.
$500 apiece or for the both of us?
That's for the both of you, naturally. But that's $250 each, plus the money you have coming for the card game. Think about it. All you'll probably be doing is watching my back, helping Radnor keep a few people busy while I conduct my business with Sims. Afterward, Sims is all yours.
The same business you were supposed to conduct with him on the train?
Yes. Only this time it's going to turn out different. I'll get what I want, or I'll have Sims's head on a stick. Are you two coming or not?
Sounds easy enough. What do you say, Dirk?
Where is this place up north?
Actually, it's northwest, up along the border. A pleasant little mining town called Cold Ridge.
Sheriff Harris Sweet stood at his office window and watched Cleveland Phelps and his six gunmen swagger across the rope footbridge. The bridge separated the small town of Cold Ridge from the scattered miner shacks standing on stilts against the steep hillside. Many of the shacks would be empty now if it weren't for Phelps and his gunmen taking them over for the coming winter. Ordinarily, Sweet liked it here in winter, not having to put up with the miners or the occasional drifter, and not having to crack a drunken head now and then. Winter here was his vacation time, in a sense. But not this winter. This winter, he would be putting up with Phelps and his bunch, something Sweet didn't like doing even in the summer when folks were more spread out. The biting cold pressed people closer together, made them huddle in a circle of wood stove heat and fireplaces. Sweet could smell them while he was thinking about it. The odor of dried and crusted body sweat, greasy hair, and fermenting wool socks. The company mine fell off to a skeleton staff during the long winters. Most of the miners trekked down the mountainside by mule or on foot and spent weeks at a time in the whorehouses and whiskey swills down at Long's Bow or Brody. That was a natural order of things here. But now, Cleveland Phelps and his men were upsetting that order.
Look at you sons of bitches.
Sweet raised the Colt Peacemaker from his holster and tapped the tip of the barrel gently against the pane of wind glass.
Pow, pow, pow.
Thin smile formed on Sweet's lips beneath the scant mantle of a wispy gray mustache. Then he lowered the pistol back into his holster and gently patted the butt. Sweet walked over, sat down behind his battered desk, and managed to busy himself with a stack of wanted posters when Phelps swung the door open.
Have you ever heard of knocking, Phelps? I'm kind of busy here.
I bet. What are you expecting, the James gang? Jesse and Frank gonna ride in here, pull your bridge down?
Phelps shot a glance at the men gathering around him at the edge of the desk, a lot of them grinning at his remark. Phelps didn't like Sweet, and he gave little attempt at hiding it. Harris Sweet did not fit the image Phelps had of a rough, hard-boned old lawman. In spite of Sweet's reputation, he almost had the look of a dandy. Clean cheeks, narrow eyes, thin shoulders, a fine nose that didn't look like it had ever been broken.
What can I do for you, Phelps? Keep it short.
Now that's more like it, Sheriff. Me and the boys are going to be gone a few days. We're riding up to the mine, looking things over. If J.T. Priest arrives whilst we're gone, tell him to sit tight here. I'm also expecting my kid brother, Darby, and a man named Chester Means. If they show up, make them at home for me.
Will that be all?
Now that you mention it, if that steam engine gets here today, tell him to bring up some more beefsteaks and rye whiskey. I'm not going to spend the winter living on elk and blacktail. Gets to where somebody passes gas, you're afraid to strike a match around them.
We'll be lucky if the engine makes another trip after today. The weather's moving down to us. You want beef all winter, you might think about heading south.
Well, we like it right here, Sheriff. We just want good provisions.
I'll tell him, Phelps. Now, if you don't mind...
Sweet cut a glance at the stack of wanted posters on his desk, then leveled his gaze back at Phelps.
Well, no sir, Sheriff. We don't want to get in the way of you upholding the law. Any known felons show up, you just holler real loud. We'll come running.
I'll do that. You leaving now or what?
Yeah, we're leaving. Come on, boys.
A big furry black tomcat came rubbing around the desk leg and looked up at him with its one good eye.
Gratch, you old bastard. Get up here.
Sweet bent to pick up the big tomcat and tried cradling it on his forearm. The cat bared its long teeth at him, its one eye sharp, deep, and yellow, the color of polished gold. The other eye was cloudy, white, and dead, a jagged scar running through it like a river on a map.
Hush now, you don't mean a word of it. Settle down now.
The big cat gave in and relaxed, slinking against the palm of Sweet's hand as it stroked its furry back.
There, you see? You're just mean and restless, that's all you are. I hate a damn cat worse than anything. Yes, I do. You know I do.
The cat nestled against Harris Sweet's chest as he cradled the tomcat like a baby in his arms. In the next town over from the one they just hit, J.T. Priest stood in the open doorway and adjusted the dead mare's heavy wool coat on himself.
I swear it gets cold every mile farther north this time of year. Hey, don't get me wrong, what I was saying about Cleveland Phelps.
Priest half turned to Denver Stanton, who stood one step behind him in the gutted lobby of the bank.
I've always said Cleveland Phelps is a good enough gunman. But when it comes to a gang this big, Phelps doesn't have enough vision, I suppose you could say. Yes, it takes vision to run an entire operation. Phelps only ran a small part of Los Pistoleros, sort of the muscle end of things. Marbury and I have always been the brains of this organization. What do you think?
Priest opened the black heavy coat just enough to highlight the shine of his new pistol in its hand-tooled holster.
Well, I'm not saying he intended for us to do you any harm.
In order to be successful, a man needs to look successful, I always say. If you ever go east, you'll find a lot of people there agree with me. Myself, I'm right at home back east.
Cleveland Phelps just said bring you to him. He kind of left it open whether we was rescuing you or just taking you hostage, so to speak.
Stanton followed Priest as he adjusted the white straw skimmer hat on his head and stepped out onto the boardwalk.
You can't really blame us. We figured he was the man in charge.
See? I sensed that right off. I'm just glad I got the chance to straighten you out before something got out of hand. The truth is, after seeing the way you and your boys handled Summit, then this place... I'll go so far as to say you might be taking over Phelps' job if he's not careful.
I'm not out to cause any hard feelings between you two. But if it's there to begin with, I can't turn down a chance to get ahead.
I understand.
Priest looked across the dirt street to where the two new men, Luther Eisen and his son Bert, stood looking at a new Winchester repeating rifle, a price tag dangling from its barrel. A few yards from them, another new gunman, a black man named Gant, pitched a pair of bulging saddlebags over his horse's rump.
Let me ask you this, Stanton. For the sake of business, where do you see yourself being, say, 3 to 5 years from now?
Hell, 3 to 5 years from now? Well, I never really gave it any thought. Be alive, I reckon. Rob all I can, drink and whore all I can. Walk as wide as I can get from rattlesnakes and knotted ropes, why?
Stanton. You deserve more than that, mi amigo. Any man deserves more than that. Don't you ever think of getting some real power in your hands? These are the golden years for our nation. The days of wealth, expansion, of a man stepping forth boldly in this new frontier and squeezing it for all it's worth. Don't you want a big part of all that?
No.
Across the street, Bert Eisen went back inside the mercantile store. Silence passed as the two of them watched a fire flare up inside the mercantile store. In seconds, tumbling flames spilled out of the doorway and licked upward in a boil of black smoke.
Jesus, is he coming out?
In the street, Luther Eisen stood staring at the burning store with the new rifle hanging in his hand, the price tag fluttering on the breeze. The other men gathered and watched and stared back and forth at one another, anxious, bewildered.
Surely to God that fool hasn't set himself afire.
I don't know. They argue and spat all the time, as most fathers and sons are prone to do, but damn.
Luther Eisen stepped closer to the raging fire, trying to see through it, leaning forward and then drawn back from the heat, his arm raised to shield his face. Suddenly, the large showcase window burst forth in a stream of smoke and fire as Bert Eisen launched himself through it. Bert's arms were clasped tight around a bundle of new rifles, and a pistol belt smoked on his shoulder. The black man, Gant, ran forward with a bucket of water from a horse trough and pitched it on him.
That boy has some serious problems.
Yeah, but you can't count old Bert out. I never said they was neither one smart. I just said they're both good gunmen.
It's none of my business, but what happened to that boy's front teeth?
Well, they say a mule kicked him out. Probably was old Luther did it, though. He won't tolerate no sass. And Bert used to be idiot enough to back-talk him. What can you expect? Luther kicks like a mule anyway. He pounded that boy's head his whole life, but it never done any good. If anything, made him worse.
How's Bert gonna be at following orders?
Bert? Hell, Bert'll kill anything you sick him on. And don't care about the odds either. He'll hone in on the one he's after and get him. Worse than a pit dog.
No kidding. What I was saying is, you need to give some thought to what you want in the future. I know you want to get ahead. You said so yourself.
I do want to get ahead as far as I can money-wise. I'm no fool. I just don't have a head for all that stuff like who owns what and Midwest investment and so on. That's for you and Phelps to sort out. You want good old-fashioned robbing and killing, though. I'm your man.
That's good enough for me. All this stock ownership and who owns what is a bunch of nonsense anyway. I wish I'd never had to fool with it. You take care of what you do best, and I'll handle the paperwork.
Now see, that's the way I like it. I figure money I don't steal myself at the end of a gun ain't really mine to begin with.
I couldn't agree more. If that idiot hasn't roasted himself, bring him around later. I'd like to get to know him a little better.
And his paw and a black fella too?
Nah, just Bert. I sort of feel sorry for the lad. Might take him under my wing, so to speak.
Back in Summit, Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth had spent the night and the day before helping the townsfolk get the town back in order. They'd helped board up broken windows until the repairmen could get to him, and even loaded burnt debris and swept and raked the large burnt spot from the middle of the street. As they did so, they'd asked questions, gotten descriptions of the pillagers, and taken note of how many gunmen had been riding in the gang. There was no doubt that it was J.T. Priest and his men, with Martin Tooney riding with them.
Ready to ride?
Hart gazed up at the graying sky to the north.
We need to get into their tracks before rain sets in.
Yep, let's get to it.
It was afternoon, and Hart and Roth had readied their horses at the hitch rail.
We'll probably see more of the same at the next town north of here. Looks like these boys have gone on a spree.
They turned their horses to the dirt street and rode out past the townsfolk. They followed the tracks of six horses for the next 3 hours. Roth, having seen the particulars of one horse wearing store-bought shoes with a circled X stamped in its center turn, and another horse in sore need of shoeing. When they came to the place where the tracks led off west toward Luther Eisen's place, they followed him for another hour or more, until they stopped at the broken fence in 200 yards from a weathered shack standing in the shadow of a rocky hillside. On the ground, tracks of the same horses overlapped, coming back out along the trail and cutting north on the side of a broken wire gate. Roth stepped down from his saddle, examining the tracks closely. Then he looked up at Sullivan Hart.
Looks like they've picked up three more riders.
Hart studied the empty yard in front of the shack.
Looks abandoned, but we best check it out.
Roth mounted, and as they moved their horses forward at a cautious walk, an older woman dressed in rags stepped out onto the drooping porch and raised a long-barreled shotgun toward them.
Whatever you're selling, I ain't buying. If you think I'm playing, just keep on coming.
Ma'am, we're federal deputies. We're hunting escaped convicts. Their tracks led us here.
Then their tracks can just turn you around and lead you out. There's nobody here but me and this dog, and neither one of us will kill you where you stand.
As if on cue, a brindle hound bounded forward, racing toward him, then skidded to a halt a few yards away.
We can't risk him nicking one of these horses' legs.
Don't shoot yet.
Roth turned his big dun and sidled it closer. The dog gave ground a few feet, then replanted its forepaws.
He's all bark. Come on, let's get this over with.
I'm not warning yous again.
Ma'am, you have to understand we mean you no harm. We gotta do our jobs.
Ha! The law's never meant me anything but harm.
Even as she spoke, she relented a bit, lowering the shotgun an inch, yet still keeping the stock raised to her shoulder.
He's right, ma'am. We only want to know where these men are headed and who left here with them.
Why? So you can kill them, take them in, and hang them? I know how you Judge Parker deputies operate. My boy ain't done nothing wrong. Neither's my man. For a while, anyway. I can't speak for that black devil Gant.
If they've done nothing wrong, ma'am, they have nothing to worry about. Maybe we can stop them before they get off on the wrong foot with this gang. We saw what these men did back in Summit. I won't lie to you. If your man or your son ride with them, then there's no doubt they'll come to a bad end. Is that what you want?
This never mattered what I want. My man is Luther Ison. He's never been any good. If you have to kill him and Gant, I reckon they deserve it. But my boy, Bert, can't help himself. He's never had a lick of sense. He just does what other folks tells him to do. Will you not kill him if you can keep from it?
We'll do our best not to, ma'am. We know about J.T. Priest and the prison guard, Tooney. Who are the others?
Denver Stanton. He's some kind of third cousin to Luther. The others are Carl White and Bobby Crady. That's the only ones I know. They talk like they're headed north to do some dirt. Someplace called Cold Ridge. Luther was fool enough to go along with them. My boy, Bert, follows him around like a lost dog. I don't know why, though, the way Luther treats him.
She finally lowered the shotgun and held it across her waist.
There's some coffee inside. I reckon it won't hurt if you step down and have some before you leave.
Thank you all the same, ma'am, but we need to keep moving.
I wish you would. I don't expect I'll ever see Bert again.
That coffee sounds fine to me, ma'am.
They drank coffee seated at a round wooden table and listened as she told them how all the while the men had been here, all Priest had talked about was the money they were going to make riding with him.
Oh, you'd think Luther would know better. But I reckon he's been here in one spot too long. He never could sit still long. There's too much meanness in him.
Hart and Roth only listened, nodding as she recounted her life with an outlaw like Luther Ison, and how harsh it had been trying to stay one step ahead of the law while raising a child. At the end of their second cup of coffee, seeing that she had gotten a lot out of her system, the deputy stood up.
We thank you for your hospitality, ma'am. Is there anything we can do for you?
Do for me?
Yes, ma'am. We could take you to town on our way, see to it you find a place to stay.
You'll soon run out of supplies out here. Got no horse, no way to get around?
Don't worry about me. I'm used to getting left behind. Something will turn up. Something always does.
She followed him out onto the porch where she stood watching while they mounted. Robin Hart tipped their hats to her and rode out along the dusty path leading back to the trail.
Priest will gather as many men as he can. Anybody he can put between himself and the law.
Yep. If he's meeting with more Los Pistoleros than Coleridge, he doesn't want to show up alone. He'll want a lot of men with him to make a strong impression for himself. We're gonna have our hands full with that bunch.
By the end of the following day, they'd followed the outlaws' tracks to the town of Benton and stopped at the far end of the main dirt street, not surprised at the sight of a burnt-out hull of a building or at the boarded-up storefronts where the windows had been shattered.
Looks like Priest and his friends haven't wound down yet.
They won't stop, not until J.T. Priest figures he's let everybody know he's the cock of the walk.
Hold your fire! We're lawmen!
Drop your guns! We're not taking any chances.
Not taking any chances?
Listen to me! We're federal deputies at Judge Parker's court. We're tracking the man who did this to you. We're coming in now. Don't start shooting at us.
How do we know you're lawmen?
For crying out loud, if they acted like this with Priest and his bunch, we wouldn't have to be here.
They're scared to death. Ma'am, we have badges. We really are lawmen. We've got to come in and find out what's going on here. Please don't shoot at us.
They stepped their horses forward slowly, keeping their hands chest high in a show of peace. Out in front of the burnt mercantile store, they stopped again and looked at the wary faces as they peered above the debris and from around corners of alleyways and buildings. A big woman carrying a shotgun stepped out from behind a twisted pile of scorched tin roofing. She looked long and hard at the badges on Hart's and Roth's chests.
You can't blame us for being this way. They've just about put us out of business here.
We understand, ma'am. They did the same thing to Summit.
Then why haven't you done something about them?
We intend to, as soon as we catch up to them. Can we step down now? Can't spend much time here. There's other towns between here and where they're headed.
They killed our mayor. He was the only mayor this town ever had. Just took office last week. Now he's dead. One of them even stripped him of his coat.
They're a bad bunch. That's why we're after them.
The worst one of the bunch is that idiot boy with his front teeth missing. He set that fire, then almost burnt himself up. After he came out, another man started pistol whipping him. Would have beat him to death if the leader hadn't stopped him.
The leader is J.T. Priest, ma'am. He's an escaped felon. The boy is Bert Eisen. The man beating him was probably his father.
His father? Lord, no wonder the idiot wouldn't fight back. When they left, the leader had the boy riding next to him.
We need some supplies. Did they leave much behind?
Very dang little. But you let us know what all you need. We'll get it together some way. But you've got to let us know when it comes time to hang them bastards. I wouldn't miss it if I have to walk all the way to Fort Smith.
The way things are going, I wouldn't count on a hanging if I were you. I don't think they'll ever make it back to court.
Like the two towns before it, Cedar Bluff had not been prepared for what came thundering in on the billowing dust. By the time a few townsmen realized they were under attack, it was too late. J.T. Priest's men had swept down on the small bank, looted it, and began taking what they wanted from the stores along the boardwalk. This time, Priest didn't even bother stepping down from his horse. He sat in the middle of the street, young Bert Eisen on the horse beside him, and watched the rest of the men plunder the helpless town. Bert Eisen had been riding at Priest's side all day. Now, as he started to step down and join in the melee, Priest stopped him with a hand on his forearm.
Take a break, Bert. You've done your part. Let these boys handle it. Some of them look like they need the practice.
Bert Eisen just looked at him, his eyes more flat and dull than any priest had ever seen. Robert looked down at Priest's hand on his forearm. Priest removed his hand.
Bert, you don't say much. I like that about you. How come I never heard of you before? Guess your pa hasn't wanted anybody to know about you. Figures you'd be worth more to an operation like this than he is.
Bert still made no reply. Luther Eisen ran up to him carrying two bottles of whiskey in each hand.
Get on down here, boy.
Don't worry about your boy, Luther. He's sitting this one out with me.
He always does as I tell him, JT. Don't go butting into family business.
I'll pretend I didn't hear that, Luther. Now get yourself busy. I'm the boss. If I say he stays here with me, that's how it is.
Luther Eisen clenched his teeth, his fist balled at his sides. He stood seething at Priest until Gant saw what was going on and ran up and grabbed him by his arm.
Luther, come on. You gotta see this. Carl White's got an old doctor down on all fours, making him ride him around like a mule. He's even whipping the doc with a riding quirt.
Luther Eisen hesitated for a second, staring up at J.T. Priest. Then, as if something had just clicked in his mind, he turned and grinned at Gant.
What the hell? Let's go take a look.
There, Bert. You see? As long as I'm the man in charge, you don't have to take orders from nobody else. Even your daddy. How's that suit you?
Bert only stared.
Of course, I expect you to do what I tell you. Say, what if I were to tell you to take up a pistol or a knife and wade in and kill some son of a bitch for me? You'd do that for me, wouldn't you?
Bert shrugged, a simple, unthinking gesture from an empty mind.
Good boy. Suppose I were to ask you to kill old Tooney there. You'd do it for me, wouldn't you?
Bert started to lunge his horse forward, but Priest caught his arm.
No, not like this. What I'd like is for him to just disappear tonight. No gunshot, no noise of any kind. Just poof, and he's gone. Will you do that for me? And just keep it between the two of us?
He watched Bert Eisen lean forward in his saddle, staring at Tooney. Bert's eyes as flat and empty as slate stone. Then Bert nodded and spread a toothless grin.
Good boy. You get that done for me tonight. I'm counting on you.
As Priest turned forward in his saddle, he caught sight of two young men walking toward him straight up the middle of the street, their hands raised. Priest straightened at the sight of him.
Hold up, Bert. What's this coming here?
Don't shoot, mister! We come to join you, if you have us.
On the boardwalk out front of the small bank, Stanton and Tooney turned toward the two men, their pistols cocked and ready.
Easy, men. Let's hear them out. You want to join us? Who the hell are you?
Damn it, everybody, quiet down! I can't hear myself think!
Now then.
I'm Tom Bays, Jr.
Tom jerked his head toward the young man beside him.
This is my brother. Everybody calls him Shorty. We want to join up with you, sir.
Well now, Tom Bays, Jr., why would you boys want to do a thing like that at a time like this?
Well, the truth is, me and Shorty been wanting to ride with the gang for the longest time. As soon as y'all rode into town, I knew we needed to say something.
So you just stroll in here right in the middle of things as if I had nothing better to do.
We apologize for that, sir.
Shorty Bays took a half step forward.
But once you're gone, it'd be too late. We figured we'd have to take our chances. Can you use us? Well, if not, I reckon it was just our mistake.
What Shorty means is, we're both willing to do whatever it takes.
Shut up, Tom Bays, Jr. I heard your brother loud and clear. This beats all I've ever seen. We're right smack in the middle of business, and you just come in and make yourselves at home. You boys are deserters, aren't you?
If we was, we wouldn't admit it, sir. But we're looking for work, and we don't care what we do.
Ordinarily, we'd kill a couple of wet-nosed bastards butting in this way. No references, nobody to vouch for you. But I like men who are bold and not afraid to state their intentions. You boys got any horses fit to ride?
Yes, sir. If you don't mind that they've got army brains.
That don't bother me. I guess you know you'd have nothing coming from this job.
We understand that. We ain't expecting something for nothing. Next job, we'll do our part. We just want a chance to prove ourselves.
And that you will. Have either of you ever heard of a gang called Los Pistoleros?
No, sir, but if that's who you are, we're real proud to be part of it.
And well, you should be, boys. This is Bert Eisen. He'll be seeing to it that you both do your jobs. Bert doesn't say much, so you'll just have to learn what he expects of you. Cross him, and you're crossing me. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
All right, then. Shorty and Tom Bays, get yourselves over to that mercantile store and get some decent clothes on you. When we ride out of here, I want you both looking sharper than a Cincinnati clap doctor. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
And I better see some serious-looking rifles hanging in your hands. And some shiny pistols and tied-down holsters. Come back here looking like gunmen.
Stanton stepped off the boardwalk and walked over to Priest, looking up at him.
JT, you sure about this? Them boys look like they need both hands to find their asses.
Don't second guess me, Stanton. You want to do something? Go help them pick out some warm clothes. Don't want them to freeze to death in their saddles. They'd make us all look bad.
Whatever you say, boss.
There now. Bert, you heard what I told them. Those are your men. You take charge. They give you any problem? Well, you do what you think is best. You understand me?
Bert only stared.
Only make sure you don't kill either one of them until after we get to Cold Ridge. Understand?
Bert only stared.
Just nod then, Bert. Either yes or no, all right? Can you do that?
Me too.
Priest just stared at him for a second.
All right. Get back to work. Take plenty of supplies and whiskey. We got a long ride ahead of us.
Snow flurries had moved in by the time the small service engine finished its winding climb toward Cold Ridge. Quick Charlie Sims and Kate McCorkle were the only two passengers. They'd left Harrington's Pullman car sitting on a siding track at Lodgings, a small rail town at the bottom of the mountain. Then they'd boarded a short passenger car at the company depot. The upward climb had been slow and labored, with streaks of ice shining in the rock ledges and crevices that drifted past the windows in a silver mist. Now, snowflakes spun in the chilled air. Stepping down from the platform, Kate hiked the fur collar of her winter coat up against her cheeks and looked all around the empty street, taking some comfort in knowing a big Colt 45 lay down deep in her coat pocket.
I hope you know what you're doing, Charlie.
It's a little late to be asking that question, Kate.
Charlie cupped her elbow and assisted her toward the wooden building, where a faded sign with an even more faded star painted on it hung on rusty chains.
Let's go find this Sheriff Harris suite and introduce ourselves to him. What do you say?
I say you better watch every step you take. This is Cleveland Phelps and J.T. Priest territory. They would kill one another just to get a chance to kill you.
Now you're getting the picture.
Sims glanced at the dirty window in the sheriff's office and saw a figure staring out at him.
Don't look now, Kate, but I think Harris Sweet just saw us coming.
Oh? Is that good or bad?
Neither. You know, Kate, since there doesn't seem to be anyone around, why don't you go to the hotel and get us a suite of rooms?
A suite? We'll be lucky if we can settle for a roof we can't see through.
Sims caught a glimpse of the figure moving away from the window. At first, he thought the sheriff had come to open the door for him. After a second, when the door didn't open, Sims cocked his head slightly, reached out and started to open the door for himself and go inside. But then he stopped himself. It became apparent that no one was going to answer.
Excuse me, Sheriff?
Sims looked across at Harris Sweet, sitting idly behind his desk.
Yeah? What do you want?
Pardon me, Sheriff. Perhaps I've caught you at a bad time. Sorry, I'll come back later.
He began to draw the door slowly shut.
No, come on in. Just make it short. I'm busy.
Are you sure, Sheriff? Well, I don't want to intrude.
Damn it, I said come on in.
Sweet rounded a hand, impatiently flagging him inside.
You're gonna let all the heat out?
Certainly, Sheriff.
Town's getting busier than New York City. Who are you, mister, and what do you want?
Without answering Sweet, he focused his attention on the big cat.
It's quite a rough-looking feline you've got there, Sheriff.
Sims eased his fingertips out a few inches from the cat's nose.
Does he bite?
He's been known to now and again. Who are you? What's your business here?
But Sims just looked closer at the cat, offering his fingertips once again. This time, the big furry animal stretched its neck outward to where Sims' hand stopped. Just as it almost touched its probing nose to his fingers, Sims eased his hand back, making it come to him. The cat gave him a curious look, withdrew, but then leaned forward again.
Well, I'm here looking for Cleveland Phelps and J.T. Priest, although I doubt if Priest has made it up here yet.
Oh, I bet you're Quick Charles Sims, the one who caused such a stir for everybody.
Yep, that's me. I've heard of you for a long time, Sheriff Sweet. You got a tall reputation. Tell you the truth, when I heard you were the law here, I almost decided not to come.
That a fact? You'd have been wise not to. There's a lot of men wanting to nail your hide to a board.
Oh, I know, Sheriff. But I figured if you're here, you'll uphold the law, the way you're known to do. Most folks I've talked to about you all say the same thing, that Harris Sweet is a tough law man, but he always keeps things fair and square.
That's what they say, huh?
Oh, yes. You haven't been forgotten down there, Sheriff. That's why I thought I'd better pay you a courtesy call before things start heating up between me and Los Pistoleros.
Los Pistoleros? What do you know about Los Pistoleros, except that they all want you dead?
I know a lot about Los Pistoleros, Sheriff.
Sims ruffled the cat's head a bit. Sweet was surprised at how the animal had allowed Quick Charlie Sims to even get so close, let alone get so familiar.
Fact is, I even own a large amount of stock in Midwest Investment. We both know the Midwest is the real power behind the gang. I know Midwest Investment owns this whole mountain, silver mine and all. I know that every month you get a pay envelope from Midwest. I know it must stick in your craw a little, stuck up here year after year, watching all that silver go down the mountainside, ending up in the hands of people like Priest and Phelps. And all you get is a monthly wage. Huh. How am I doing so far?
You're talking. I'm listening.
Well, then I hope you're listening good, Sheriff. Because I've got a notion you've seen your last pay envelope until Midwest Investment gets some problems ironed out for itself. Since William Mawbry dropped out of sight, things have really been going downhill.
And I suppose you're the man who's going to straighten all that out? There's a rumor that William Mawbry ain't coming back. Cleveland Phelps even thinks you might have killed Mawbry.
Oh, who knows how these rumors get started?
As Sims spoke, he scooped the big animal into his arms. That cat offered no resistance. Sims nestled the big furry cat against his chest, running a hand along its back. Sweet was stunned. The cat had never let anyone else handle him this way.
But the thing is, Sheriff, big changes are in the wind. Might be time for you to decide who you want to work for, me or a couple of wanted outlaws like Phelps and Priest.
You didn't come all the way up here just to see if you and I could strike up an alliance. You'd be a fool to take that kind of chance. What's your real angle in all this, Mr. Quick Charlie Sims?
The fireman from the train stepped inside and looked across at Harris Sweet.
Sheriff, we're headed back down. Anything you need the next trip up?
Yeah. Phelps wants some beef and some more whiskey brought up before the weather sets in.
It might take a while, Sheriff. We're pretty backed up down there.
And the hell with it. Phelps will just have to do without. Did you bring an envelope with my name on it this trip?
No, nothing's come through this month yet. I wish you would hurry up, though. I need to get paid myself.
I see. That'll be all, Jake. Just bring it up here to me as soon as it gets there.
I'll do that, Sheriff.
Well, Sims, you called it right about my pay. Maybe you're worth tagging along with for a while. I've been wondering how to get these damned outlaws off this mountain so I can enjoy some peace and quiet.
Well, I can't promise you peace and quiet right away, Sheriff Sweet.
Sims stooped down to set the big cat on the floor.
But if you will give me some playing room with these men, I can promise you once they leave, they won't be coming back.
That's bold talk, Sims. What the hell did you do to that cat? He's never warmed up like that to anybody before.
I just treated him the way a tough old cat wants to be treated, Sheriff. Do we have an understanding?
We'll see.
There was no clerk at the Ballantyne Hotel. Just a cigar box on the counter with a note saying,
"Gone for the winter, pay on your honor."
Sim smiled and dropped $10 into the box. In the top corner room of the hotel, overlooking the street, Kate McCorkle stood beside the sagging bed, the carpet bag spread open before her. She'd taken out both pieces of the sawed-off shotgun from beneath their personal belongings and fitted the barrel to the rear stock.
And that's it? You're going to trust this man?
She picked up two 10-gauge shells, shoved them into the chambers.
We have to trust someone, Kate. Harris Sweet is a good man to have on our side. I get the impression that he doesn't care much for Phelps or J.T. Priest. Luckily, we got here when Cleveland Phelps and his men are up at the silver mines. Now, all I need from Sweet is some breathing room. I need time to talk to Cleveland Phelps without his guns pointed at me. Now, don't forget, my only interest here is J.T. Priest. As soon as I can cut Priest out of the herd, we'll be out of here. Hart and Roth can take care of the rest of those pistoleros.
If they ever get here. It's getting worse outside by the hour.
Nah, they'll be here, Kate. That's one thing we can count on. Meanwhile, I think I'll get back over to Sweet's office, see if we can't get a little better acquainted. Want us to be the best of friends by the time Cleveland Phelps gets here.
Oh, you gonna get him into a card game?
No, my guess is Sweet's not a poker player. This is just a way of breaking the ice, finding out what his game really is. Oh, don't worry, Kate, I've already made friends with his cat.
On the boardwalk out front of his office, Harris Sweet watched the service engine begin its slow descent down the mountainside, gray wood smoke curling upward in the snowy air. He waited with his polished pool cue cradled in his arm, timing it just right until he saw Sim step out through the door of the hotel and start toward him. Then, as if he hadn't seen Sims at all, he hiked up his wool coat collar and walked along the boardwalk toward the saloon, the big cat close at his boot heels.
Sheriff!
I see it didn't take you long to unpack.
I travel light. Billiards, huh?
Yep. I try to shoot a few games every day. If everybody stays away and doesn't pester me... How's your game, Sims?
Not good, I'm afraid. But I do play a fair hand of poker.
Not with me, you don't. If we've got anything more to talk about, we'll have to do it over a billiard table.
Well, I'll do the best I can and try not to embarrass myself.
Cleveland Phelps stood in the open doorway of the mining shack and looked out at the entrance of the main shaft 40 yards away. The entrance had been covered by heavy iron doors and laced with chains, sealed and locked for the winter.
So what do you think, boss?
Benton Rhodes was standing close behind him.
Looks like the weather is setting in fast. Think we better get on down to Cold Ridge?
Yeah. Go round up the boys and bring that old Indian over here. Bring a good strong rope, too.
We're gonna hang him, boss?
That's right, Rhodes. We're gonna hang him and leave him hung till spring. That'll leave a message for anybody else who comes snooping around here.
Whatever you say, boss.
Phelps looked all around, liking the feeling of being in charge, of having it all going his way now. This was his operation now, his gang, his mine, his mountain. There were other outstanding shares in Midwest Investment, but that was no problem. He owned a large portion of the stock and would gain more control at every turn in the road. He was pretty sure William Mawbry was dead, and there was not a doubt in his mind that J.T. Priest soon would be. He'd see to that himself as soon as Stanton and the others brought Priest to Cold Ridge. Phelps' only problem was how he'd run a big business like this. But maybe he'd find somebody to do all that. All he wanted was the income. He could have let Stanton and his men in on the plan and had him kill Priest the minute they broke him out of jail, but he wanted it to be a surprise for everybody. Besides, killing J.T. Priest was something Phelps wanted to do personally. He wanted to do it in front of the whole gang, give them something to think about, let them know beyond any doubt who ran Los Pistoleros from now on. He could just see the look on Priest's face as he rode in with Denver Stanton, Bobby Crady, Earl Mellon, and Carl White, thinking Phelps had actually sent the four men to break him out of jail just so that he could turn the gang over to him.
Fat chance, Priest. Stupid son of a bitch.
Phelps grinned, watching Rhodes and the other men walk toward him across the mine yard. Rhodes shoved the old Indian along in front of him, the Indian's hands tied behind his back. Phelps stepped out to meet him. Behind Rhodes, a young gunman named Witten stood with a coiled hemp rope on his shoulder. He took it down and tied a slip knot in one end of it. Cleveland Phelps kicked the old Indian back with a sharp toe of his boot.
On your feet, old timer. I don't like looking down when I talk.
One of the men snatched the Indian by his long gray hair and pulled him to his feet.
I am not a thief. I am Crow Striker. Every winter I stay in this shack. You can ask Harris Sweet.
Harris Sweet? Just your luck. I don't see Sweet around here anywhere. I'll be sure and ask him the minute we get back to Cold Ridge, though. If I'm wrong, I certainly apologize to you in advance. Did any of you boys hear Sweet mention an Indian staying up here in the winter?
The men shook their heads in unison.
He's lying to us. I can tell by the look on his face.
There. You see? It could take all day to figure out whether or not you're telling the truth. Meanwhile, this weather ain't getting no better for us. Rhodes, you and Witten, take him over there and hang him from the flagpole. The rest of you go get your horses and bring mine to me. Let's get on back to town.
No! Wait, you're making a mistake!
Come on, old man. You heard him. This just ain't your lucky day.
Witten dropped a loop of rope around the man's thin neck. Phelps watched the men all move away. Four of them going for the horses in a barn on the other side of the mine yard. The other two kicking and shoving the old Indian toward the tall flagpole. This was a good bunch of gunmen, all of them ready to do whatever he told them to do. J.T. Priest or William Mawbry could never have put together this kind of talent in such a short period of time. Phelps had always been the one with a knack for gathering good gunmen. That's why he'd always handled the muscle end of things.
But not for much longer. I'll soon be running the whole show. Get somebody else to handle the dirty work.
He had a good selection to choose from. Rhodes and Witten were a couple of Texas outlaws he'd used on a couple of bank jobs in the past year. Both of them were killers with ice in their veins. The other four were just as tough and even more seasoned. There was Fat Doc Mason, paid killer out of California. Luke Spivey, a Kentucky bank robber, kidnapper, and escaped felon. And Matt and Luke Terrell, two cousins straight out of the Wild Bunch, both wanted for murder in Wyoming. These were the kind of men he could trust, men like himself.
Rhodes, take his scalp. I want it for a souvenir.
It's snow blew in heavier when they left the mining site moments later and began the wind and ride down the switchback trail toward Cold Ridge. The Indian's body swayed atop the flagpole in the cold wind, a frosty sheet of clinging snow collecting across his drooping shoulders. In the early afternoon, Cleveland Phelps drew his horse up at the end of the riders and motioned toward a deep rock overhang, barely visible through the swirling silver mist.
Pull in there! We'll rest the horses and warm up some.
Rhodes looked to Witten and Doc Mason.
It's not gonna get any better till we get down to town.
He knows we've got to stay ahead of the weather.
Doc Mason had his thick, round face tucked back into his raised coat collar.
But it won't hurt to stop for an hour, get some warm blood circulating.
I've always been more of a hot weather person. Give me West Texas any day over this.
They all dropped from their saddles, shook themselves off, and beat their hat brims against their legs.
Anybody got a bottle?
I knew you'd ask.
Doc Mason lifted his saddlebag stiff flaps. He took out a half-full bottle of rye, pulled the cork, and offered it to Phelps for the first drink.
Guess this is the big blow Harris Sweet has been talking about, eh, boss?
Yeah, the beginning of it anyway. It'll get a lot worse the next few days. Sweet might not know much about anything else, but he should know this weather by now.
The bottle of rye made its rounds, then came back to Doc Mason with only one good swallow left in it. To be courteous, Doc Mason offered it to Phelps before taking a sip. To his surprise, Cleveland Phelps took it.
I'll be double damned.
Beside him, Witten saw what had happened.
Serves him right, brown nosing.
Doc Mason caught the last part of Witten's words and shot him a hard stare.
So, boss, what's the deal with Sweet anyway? He acts like he doesn't want us around, you especially.
I hope you're not one of those sensitive types who gives a blue damn what people like Harris Sweet thinks.
Not me, boss. Just curious. Hell, I'm a snake-eating Texan. I'll shut his eyes for you if you want me to.
Don't let your El Paso mouth overload your panhandle ass, young man. Harris Sweet's eyes ain't all that easy to shut. You better check him out before you try your hand at him.
You don't know me well enough to talk that way. I expect I can shut most any man's eyes I take a mind to.
Doc's right, Witten. Harris Sweet is a tough piece of work. But that doesn't mean he can't be killed. A bullet has no respect for reputation, I've always said. Boys, while we're here, this is as good a time as any to tell you what's about to happen down in Cold Ridge. I told all of you we're waiting for J.T. Priest to show up, and that's the truth. But some things are changing as soon as he gets here. Everybody here has rode with Los Pistoleros at one time or another. That's all coming to an end. I lost my regular crew of gunmen to a couple of Judge Parker's deputies, thanks to J.T. Priest. From now on, you boys are riding with me, full time, if you've no objections.
You mean it, boss?
Damn right I mean it. Priest and Marbury have let this gang fall apart on me. From now on, I'm taking over. I already own a big chunk of stock in Midwest Investment, and I plan on owning more. I'm gonna make this gang what it once was, the meanest sons of bitches that ever drew iron. Anybody not with me, best clear out before we get back to town. As soon as Priest shows up, we got some serious killing to do, starting with JT himself. If I'm right in my thinking, those two deputies won't be far behind him. They're going down too. Anybody got qualms about killing lawmen?
It's right up our alley.
All right then. Boys, there's good times ahead. I want every man here to make a fortune. At some point, I'll be stepping over into running the legitimate part of Midwest Investment. The man who will take over running this end of things is one of you, standing here today. So you better all start showing me what you're worth. Is that clear enough?
Quick Charlie Sims straightened up from the pool table as the two ball rolled into the corner pocket. He examined the layout of the balls on the green felt as he sidestepped around the corner of the table.
Three ball in the side.
Sheriff Harris Sweet eyed the shot, a bit skeptical.
Good shot.
4 ball, 2 rails in the corner.
Before he leaned over for the shot, he noticed Sweet had picked up their empty beer mugs and headed over to the bar.
Should I wait, Sheriff?
Nope, I trust you. Anybody who shoots pool like you do has no need to cheat.
Thank you, Sheriff.
But to be on the safe side, Sim stalled until a bald-headed bartender with a long handlebar mustache had filled both beer mugs. Harris Sweet came walking back with the mugs dripping foam.
I'll be damned. What a shot. I thought you said table billiards wasn't your game, Sims.
That's what I said, Sheriff. I'm doing everything I can just to keep up. Don't forget, you're 7 games ahead. 5 ball inside.
This time, Sims held his aim just a fraction to one side of the pocket. This was not the kind of shot a man would miss. It was too damn easy. The trick was to purposely miss it, but not look obvious about it. The ball clipped the edge of the pocket rail and rolled away. Harris Sweet was no newcomer to the game. It was obvious by the look he gave Sims that nothing got past him.
Well, I figured I'd better miss one, Sheriff, just to keep on your good side.
Sure you did. With a little practice, Sims, I could turn you into a hell of a pool player. 4 ball, corner pocket. But until that happens, I'll enjoy taking your money.
As if with a mind of its own, the cue ball broke out of its spin, darted 4 inches across the felt, clipped the 9 ball, and sent it into the side pocket.
Game ball, Sims.
I don't believe it, Sheriff. Nobody can make a shot like that.
You saw me do the same shot yesterday. $10 says I can make it again.
Oh, no thanks, Sheriff. I've had it with you. You're a pool shark. That's 2 days in a row you clipped me.
Aw, don't get discouraged. You're doing better every game.
The black tomcat slipped from beneath the pool table at the sight of Sims reaching a hand down to him. The big cat leaped up onto Sims' lap and rubbed his furry side against Sims' chest.
Let's see. That's 7 games today, 4 games yesterday, 11 games at 50 cents a game. I owe you $5.50, Sheriff. Better settle up with you tonight in case Phelps and his men show up tomorrow.
What's your hurry, Sims? Phelps or nobody else is going to tell me what to do.
You been thinking things over, Sheriff? Anything we need to talk about?
Yeah, I've thought things over. I like your style, Sims. I think you're slicker than socks on a rooster.
Sweet jerked his head toward the billiard table.
You haven't fooled me. I believe you could beat the devil out of hell at 9 ball if you took a notion and the stakes were high enough. Still, you have a smooth way of doing things. A good way of treating people. I like that. Hell, you've even charmed old Scratch. That's not an easy thing to do.
So, Sheriff, are you ready to back me up and keep everybody in line while I take care of my business with Priest?
Yeah, I'll keep them off you. How often does an old warhorse like me get a chance to butt heads with a no-good bunch of bastards like Cleveland Phelps and his gunmen? I call it going out in style.
Whoa, Sheriff, I want your help, but you sound like a man writing his own epitaph.
That might be exactly what I'm doing if things get out of hand here. Any man who faces a band of gunmen without giving some thought to dying is a damn fool. So don't go thinking you've won me over with cold beer and a few games of 9 ball. I've got bigger things in mind than simply backing your play.
Well, don't worry, Sheriff. Once I get myself in position with Midwest Investment, you'll be taken care of. Instead of a pay envelope every month, we'll see to it you get a percent of everything that comes out of the mine.
Oh, hush, Sims. I said I'll back your play. But it's not for any promises of silver or shares in Midwest Investment or any of that horse manure. I'll do it just because I'm getting old. Because I'm meaner than hell and still need to prove something before I die.
Sims just stared at him.
Look around, Sims. This is no real town, and I'm no real sheriff. This is a company town. I'm a paid gun. A guard, you might as well say. All the men I've faced and fought in my life, it wasn't me upholding the real law. It was me protecting the holdings of the rich and powerful. It was never me protecting decent people from the no-good sons of bitches of this world. It was those no-good sons of bitches who always paid my salary. We both know that, Sims.
Sheriff, I'm not your judge. I just came to ask your help.
And you got it. I reckon you just happened to get here about the time I quit fooling myself. Now, if you'll excuse me, I got some guns to clean and some wanted posters that need to be looked at. You take care of Scratch for me, Sims.
In the hotel room, Sims paced back and forth, the big black Tomcat pacing with him, a few inches behind his right boot heel.
I don't understand your problem. You wanted his help. You've got it.
But he's talking crazy, Kate. Sure, I played up to him, got on his good side, but now he acts like this is going to be his way of going out in a blaze of glory. Something about this old sheriff I can't figure out. Something hiding inside him, just beneath the skin. I feel like I've lit the fuse to a powder keg.
And you don't want to feel guilty afterward, right? When you invite somebody into a gunfight, Charlie, you really should consider the possibility that they might get killed.
Kate, all I want is for him to keep everybody in line long enough for me to talk some sense into him. You know my only true interest here is in JT Priest.
Oh? Then owning Midwest Investment doesn't mean anything to you anymore. Because if you really don't want the shares, I'd be happy to take
them. Oh, stop it, Kate. Of course it means something to me, but not as much as getting Priest to show me the cave where my family's wagons are hidden. I can pull this off without Sweet getting himself killed if he'll let me. When Hart and Roth get here, they can handle Phelps and every gunman with them.
So it doesn't bother you that Hart and Roth could get killed, only Sweet. Some old paid killer who admitted to you that during his entire life his gun had gone to the highest bidder?
It's Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth's job to hunt down outlaws, Kate. And they're good at it. Besides, I'm not responsible for getting them into this. They've been after Los Pistoleros from the start. Harris Sweet could have stayed out of Phelps' way, gone on collecting his pay envelope every month and died of old age in a feather bed. Now he's got it in his mind that this is his way to die.
You don't know that, Charlie.
He gave me his cat. See what I'm saying, Kate? Sweet is cashing in. I saw it in his eyes. If you'd been there, you'd have seen the same thing.
I'll tell you what I do see, Charlie. I see you're having second thoughts. If it wasn't about Sweet, it would be about something else. It's dangerous at this point of the game. You did the same thing back in Chicago, and it got you a bullet in your back. You get everything going your way, then at the last minute...
Oh, don't start on me, Kate! I got shot in Chicago because at the last minute I didn't want to risk getting you shot. So there!
It's the same thing, Charlie! I wasn't in Chicago against my will, Charlie.
I know that, Kate. But still...
I was there because of you. I knew the risk, and I took it. If I had died there, it wouldn't have been your fault any more than it would be your fault if Sweet dies here. You have a way of making people want to help you. Sometimes you do it intentionally, sometimes it just happens. Either way, this is no time to question it or second-guess yourself. The cards are on the table.
Kate turned and faced him and nodded at the shotgun on the bed.
Hail, Charlie. I am locked and loaded.